UK Wine Show, show number 64. Terroir and Global Warming with Louis Latour. G'day. Welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 64 for the 17th of August, 2007. My name is Chris Scott, and this week we're talking again with Louis Latour, owner and manager of Burgundian Negociants, Louis Latour. This week we're talking about terroir and global warming. Depending on how you define terroir, some say it is simply the effects of soil on the wine and the grapes, while others take a more expansive view that it's a unique combination of climate as well as soils and even winemaking philosophy. Those who have painted their flag on this latter more expansive view are now in a rather weak position as the unique terroir is changing by global warming. Does this mean that people who claim to have fantastic terroir, their wines aren't as good because they don't have the same terroir anymore? We talked with Louis on his definition of terroir and what his company's doing to cope with the changing climate. Next up, for a change of climate to the sunnier, we have Jane Scott and the news.
Thanks, Chris. In the news this week, scientists discover key to peppery wines and wine drinkers confused by alcohol units. But first, latest research into rosé wine reveals that women are drinking less lager and more rosé, which they see as more sophisticated and less calorific. Sales of rosé have increased 188% since 2005 to 49 million litres, and it is women who are fueling this growth. Rosé is also favoured by younger people, with a third of all 18 to 24-year-olds saying they drink pink. Meanwhile, the number of alcohol units in a bottle of wine is still a puzzle to most UK wine drinkers. Three quarters are unsure over how many units there are, and only 6% knew that a 750ml bottle with 12% ABV contains around 9 units of alcohol. Another 20% said between 8 to 10 units, so technically that's 26% of us who are roughly right. However, we are much more savvy estimating units per glass. Over 70% stated that a small 125ml glass of wine contains 1.5 units. Remember though, with many wines now reaching alcohol levels of 14%, the units of alcohol will often be higher. That same 125ml glass, at 14% ABV, would contain 1.8 units. Finally, there's good news if you're partial to a glass of Shiraz. After 5 years of research, Australian scientists have identified the single aroma compound that produces the characteristic spicy black pepper smell that's popular with so many red wine drinkers. This exciting discovery will pave the way for winemakers to design wines with similar characteristics to Shiraz. Wine comprises a complicated array of hundreds of aroma compounds, and the so-called pepper aroma is among the 10 most powerful compounds. Just one drop is enough to make an Olympic-sized swimming pool smell peppery. Further good news is that the pepper aroma compound can be found in both Shiraz grapes and Shiraz wine, meaning it's not altered by the winemaking process. This will allow grape growers and winemakers to select particular clones of Shiraz grapes or parcels of land that will either minimise or maximise the pepper aroma. That's all this week, but 20 years ago, a Hampshire vineyard was in the news with ambitions of being the biggest producer in England. A Hampshire businessman hand-planted 33,000 vines on 45 acres in East Wellow near Romsey. Today, Wellow Vineyards is under new ownership, and it's the biggest vineyard in Hampshire and the fifth biggest in England with 54 acres under vine. Don't forget, you can get more detail on these news stories on the news homepage on our website, 3050.co.uk. That's it from me this week. Back to you, Chris.
Cheers, Jane. While some in the trade don't take rosé too seriously, I've had some cracking English rosé over the last couple of years, and while I'm still to discover a rosé with the depth of red wine, I'm not really looking for that style in rosé. I like a dry rosé with clean flavours that leap out of the glass. A lot of the volume that's sold in the UK is coming over from the States in the form of Blossom Hill and the like. What a lot of people don't seem to realise is that medium dry wines, like high alcohol wines, are also high in calories. Typically, a small glass of 125 mils of dry white wine will have about 83 calories to it, compared to 94 calories for a medium wine. It's also the case that more alcohol equals higher calories. So a small glass of red wine with, say, 12.5% alcohol is 86 calories, whereas a big beefy red at 14.5% has about 100 calories to it. Rosés may be good in that they're often not as big an alcoholic as a lot of wines, but the extra calories do add up if you prefer those medium dry rosés, which is what the Brits have been hoovering up over the last couple of years. Next time, do try a dry rosé if you want to watch your figure. I think if the government wants to help manage alcohol consumption among women, it may be smarter to put the calories on the front of the bottle rather than the alcohol, which, let's face it, is a red rag to a bull for younger drinkers. Next up, we have the interview with Louis Latour. If you'd like to know more about Louis, I interviewed him back in Show 61, and we talked about the Louis Latour family and their operations for the last 200 years as négociants. This week we talked with Louis about the definition of terroir, and how the change in climate has resulted in the difficulty in maintaining the typical high acidity that Burgundian wines have been known for, and how Louis Latour are investing in cooler regions further north. Hi, I'm here with Louis-Fabrice Latour, owner of Maisons Louis Latour. How are you?
Very well, very well.
Excellent. We're going to be just touching on terroir today and just getting your point of view on what you think it actually is. It's can be considered quite controversial in some regions. So just get a feeling for what you consider it to be.
I do believe that the terroir is a very important element of the quality of the wine, but not everything should be linked to terroir. We should look at the weather, at the exposure, and we should look at the varietal, of course, and we also should look at the work of the wine grower behind the terroir. And there is an obsession about terroir these last few years. Yes, it's very important, but it's not the paragon of everything.
A lot of people describe it as sort of sun, soil, climate, winemaker philosophy, right down to even maybe fermentation in the wines, or the yeast in the vineyards that get into the wines. Things like the soils, you know, a lot of French people talk a lot about the soils, and there's obviously some big obvious stuff like the drainage, you know, how the water flows through the ground. People also talk about, you know, minerality coming from the soils and that. Do you have an opinion on sort of flavors maybe coming or being expressed from the soils?
We all have some. We don't share the same opinion about the soil. What I don't like about the fanatics of the terroir is that it's not the case now anymore, but during a very long time, it has been an excuse not to work about the variety, not to work about the yield. And I would say that the biggest challenge of French wine, and even for Burgundy wines today, is really more to control the yield than to talk about the minerality of the terroir.
I met some people in Bordeaux a long time ago, and I was talking about the quality of the wines, and they said, you know, our wines are okay, and I said, well, why don't you try and make better wine? They said, oh, poor terroir. I thought that was more of a cop-out than anything else, whereas in New Zealand, you know, they try and make good wine irrespective of where they are. Do you find that in Burgundy as well?
No, I think we have a unique combination of very good soil from, I don't know how you say that in English, silice, limestone and everything. So we are very fortunate. But what I would say, and even ourselves at Maison Latour, we've proven that by going to the Var and by going to Ardèche, that we can make a very good wine. I wouldn't say we can make a wonderful wine, because I think then you need an additional something. But I think there are many countries, places in the world where you can have, if man works well with the good with the good choice of the good grapes, I think you can do a very, very good job.
So in Burgundy, for example, they restrict sort of the clones and the grape varieties that are allowed to grow. Do you think that things like the Appellation Controle system should form part of the concept of terroir, where they're forcing you to use certain varieties, and therefore that does set the stylistic constraints on the wine that's produced?
You know, when you look at the situation, and you were asking me before about global warming, I would say that the question about terroir is not as accurate as it used to be a few years ago. Now the obsession is more about global warming, and when we look at the Beaujolais scene, where the region is suffering, shall we go on making Gamay in the Beaujolais region? There are people who are thinking of doing Syrah. Shall we start doing Pinot. And when they make that question, they don't always think of terroir. They look at the weather, and then they look at the varietal. But they don't always look at terroir.
But terroir is part of climate, isn't it? Climate forms part of terroir. And if your climate's changing, then effectively your terroir is changing as well.
I didn't know that you take a very extensive vision of terroir. If you take an extension vision of terroir, which include weather, I think that's totally different. If you just take terroir as the soil, then it's a bit restrictive. But if you take the environment and, but for us, really, the terroir is important, the weather is as important, and the control of the yield is as important. And I think it's a combination of everything. Otherwise, it's an excuse not to work well because you have a good terroir. And as négociant, as wine buyer, as grapes buyer, very often, not anymore now, but in the past, we've met tons of people who say, I have a wonderful terroir. I'm in Puligny or I'm in Chassagne. The terroir will speak for himself. And you had some disappointment. So yes, let's admit that we have a great terroir, but let's do the rest as well.
That's fairly sound advice, I think. Obviously, with global warming changing the climate, things have to change. What have you guys been trying to do or looking at in terms of trying to adapt your vineyard practices and maybe the grape varieties and regions that you're doing to changes in climate?
What we try to achieve, certainly from a geographical point of view, and we're not the only one to do that, is to go further north sometimes. And we're trying to re-answer reds from the Chablis region, more in the Lyon, and with Irancy, we took over a company called Simon Efebvre, and they are doing some Épineux, Irancy, Vin de Pays de l'Auxois, and there are some good reds to be produced. One from what we call Haute Côte are much better than they used to be. So there are tons of relatively unknown vineyards which are doing very well now, and it's a big chance, less rustical, more elegant wines. Otherwise, we try to keep the balance on the wine. We try to harvest earlier. We try to keep more leaves because we don't want them to be burned by the sun. It's a lesson that we learn from O3. We try to control the yield, to keep the acidity. There are tons of things to be done that we were not doing. For instance, for the first time in many years, I won't do green harvest. Because I'm under the threat that even if the flowering is taking place now very well, if we have a small crop like O3, what are we going to do if we do green harvest now? So there are tons of things which have changed from a viticultural point of view in these last few years, and I can't describe them all, but it's very interesting. We have to adapt ourselves, even ourselves in Burgundy.
It's interesting about the green harvest, because obviously if you are cropping higher, it takes longer to ripen all those extra grapes. I always get confused between how fast the acidity drops away and the development of flavour compounds in the grapes. By having a higher cropping, are you slowing down the phenolic ripeness, or are you slowing down the phenolic ripeness? So how does that affect the acidity levels?
If we knew everything about the acidity level, we will tell you. The only thing I can tell you is that, of course, acidity will go down, and in a very hot vintage like O3, we've seen acidity falling apart suddenly, and there is a stage where you lose juice because of the concentration and the evaporation that you assist to a reconcentration of acidity. And it's something we do discover ourselves in Burgundy more and more when we have hot vintages. So even ourselves, the way we could keep the acidity, considering the global warming, it's something we discuss among ourselves, but we need to rediscover sometimes. And shall we make bigger crop and harvest a bit later? Shall we make a smaller crop and harvest before? I mean, everyone has his own policy.
All right then, Louis. I think we'll wrap it up there. Thanks very much.
Merci.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Louis. I think the definition of terroir will start to become more and more narrow over the next 10 to 20 years as climate change affects regions. Listening to Louis, though, he sounded very similar to a lot of New World growers. Sure, soils are important, especially in marginal climates, but Louis does believe that good terroir does not mean good wine. A good bottle of wine needs hard work and critical decisions, such as to green harvest or not. If you are a hardened wine fanatic and worried about climate change, The next international conference on climate change and wine will be held in Spain in February 2008. And then they'll have a look at the climate change, its repercussions and impacts on the industry of wine. Is it worth 350 euros a head to attend? I don't know. But if I can convince Jane to let me go, I'll try and keep you up to date. Next week, we're going to be talking with Steve Smith. He's a Kiwi, a master of wine, and he manages Craigie Range Wines in Hawkesbury, New Zealand. We're going to be talking to him about his view on terroir. Until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Jane Scott, recorded and edited by Chris Scott, and the news is researched by Sandra Clement. To listen to other shows, visit www.ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.